Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Lunchtime Special Podcast, a show about life, death, and everything in between. We hope you enjoy the show.
This is Spiro Nedelkos, your host for today's episode. Today we have a great discussion in store for you. Our subject is spirits, ghosts, and things that go bump in the night. This is a topic dear to me. I have a few stories I'll share, but more importantly, I'm curious to see what my fellow panelists have experienced. Secondly, I'd like to discuss an article by Frank T. McAndrew, a professor of psychology from Knox College. His article is called How the God You Worship Influences the Ghost You See. Joining me today, we have Ian, Brad, Atish, and Vinod. Say hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello, guys.
The paranormal and the supernatural, things which are not normally explained through science, things which are potentially in the realm of myth and folklore. I will start with my little story of the paranormal supernatural. It goes something like this. I was very, very young, about 2.5 years old. My very first memory, in fact, is something of a paranormal experience. I woke up to seeing a spectral figure, a lady dressed in black with very pale skin and black hair, literally hovering over my bed. Now, I found it utterly terrifying, and I've checked with my dad, because he remembers this incident, and he said that I was absolutely, inconsolably terrified and really, really upset. This happened while my sister was being born in the hospital. So this is one of my first memories, and I experienced this. Now, subsequently, in the same location, 10 years later, when I visited, because it was an apartment that my father owned, I had another experience where I'm staring out the window, and there was a large spectral head, considerably larger than the normal head, maybe a meter or two wide, just hovering outside the window. And I closed my eyes in fear, looked up again, and it was still there. Turned around, really, really scared now, turned again, looked out the window, and there it was. So I stared at it, and it was fairly disfigured. It was grotesquely large. So again, it was spectral because I partially could see through it. So they are the experiences I've had, and they all seem to I've had a few other premonitions and visions and voices, but they are by far the ones that stand out to me. They all seem to end once I hit puberty. So they are my odd stories. Does anyone else have any odd stories?
So all of mine happened in the same house when I was growing up. We used to all refer to it as the horror house anyway. So most of the action seemed to happen in my bedroom when I was probably about 16 through to 18, where I'd just see random sort of figures, and they were human, like they weren't sort of the same as your experience, Spiro, where they were more spectral. The first one was, it was clearly a man, that he looked honestly like a pizza man. He didn't have any pizza with him. Yeah, he honestly looked like a pizza man. So I just woke up. My bed was facing the hallway, and there was just this sort of man walking down the hallway. He was very, I don't know how to describe it, like he was very lit up, which, you know, at first I figured it was because, you know, I'd just woken up. So I tried the whole, you know, rubbing the eyes, waiting, looking down, looking back up. It was still there. And then I pretty much, yeah, because I was young, I turned over, put my head under the covers and stayed there for the rest of the night. But I used to actually have those experiences a lot, and it was very strange because I used to find if I put the TV on at night, I would see nothing. But when the TV was off, that was when I would see the most sort of stuff. Like I also saw a hunter walking down the corridor, like a man all in tan walking down the corridor. And I also saw, I assume it was a man with a mangled face as well in the same corridor. Eventually, we ended up turning that room into a storage room under the stairs because no one wanted to sleep in that room anymore, because whoever slept in that room always said that they saw things, whether it be someone, you know, sleeping in their bed next to them or walking down the hallway towards them, things like that.
Like, to me, both of these experiences are incredibly terrifying and something that I would have nothing to do with. I just want to stay as far away from floating heads that look disfigured and women wearing black. You know, been raised on stories from TV, and The X-Files was one of the shows that I used to watch, and that ended up leaving me terrified. But my question for both you guys is, do you think that these actual figures were actually trying to scare you, or do you think that they just happened to be there and they just happened to look horrific, and because you're a child, obviously, you see this and you get very scared? So what do you guys think?
Well, I mean, I was, it ranged from probably 15 or 16 through to 18, so I wasn't necessarily young, but I mean, I didn't experience anything horror-like. Like, they were, I mean, as I said, one of them looked like they had a mangled face, but it wasn't like any of them were purposely walking towards me or running towards me to hurt me. I mean, I saw some that were sort of walking towards me, but nothing vindictive, nothing dangerous like, but obviously because it's not normal, you don't perceive it as normal, you just sort of hide because you don't understand it. I witnessed nothing aggressive myself.
Yeah, similarly, I think what I was experiencing were, actually, to be honest, they looked curious, and they looked like either in their own zone or they were actually curious about me. It wasn't, there was nothing malevolent about them. The experience is terrifying. They are not terrifying, if that makes sense. The lady was looking at me with curiosity. The heads were, and the head actually revisited a few times. It may not be aware of where it is or what's going on. It just is. And I'm like looking, going, this is wrong. Why is this happening? I don't think I actually had any of what was actually going on with me and me observing it.
So, Spirit, were your experiences at night?
Well, actually, they weren't. Not always. Some of them were happening in the morning.
Oh, okay.
So, during the day. So, the first one was happened during the morning. It was like I was waking up to this. The large floating head was a mid-afternoon, and then fellow others were, which were an evening. So, it didn't really matter what time of day it was, which was interesting, particularly when during the day, because really easy to see them. So there was nothing, it wasn't some just a little fuzz in the air or something misty and kind of obscure. It was like I could see the background behind them, so it was quite clear and quite vivid. So definitely was happening during the day. What I'm curious about hearing your story, Brad, do you think though the people that you saw were former residents of the place that you lived in?
No. I mean, I couldn't tell you about the land itself. I don't know the history of the area, but I mean, we were the first people to live in that house, so it was definitely not a pre-resident of that specific house.
I think because one of the most common tropes with ghosts is that the figures they're struggling to pass over to the other side, and generally there's some sort of connection, whether it's a particularly violent incident that happened at that location or some other reason that they just can't seem to let go. So what do you guys think of that? Do you think that that ghosts are just struggling to pass over, or perhaps we're all ghosts and just some people are more in tune to seeing them than others?
I'm not too sure, but I think, or I have a feeling they're more attracted to energy. So, I mean, at that time in my life, there was a lot more sort of negative energy around me, so it's possible that they were more sort of gravitating towards that as well.
It's interesting, actually, you bring up negativity, just because something I noticed was in both stories, you guys were in vulnerable positions almost. You know, you're saying how when you had the TV on that you didn't have these experiences, and perhaps when I was younger, having the TV on was actually a comforting experience for me and helped me go to sleep. So I wonder if you have to be in a certain mind frame to have this experience, and that experience is already negative because you're in a vulnerable mind frame, and then that somehow influences the way that you perceive these spirits.
And I mean, if you think about it, it's frightening in general purely because, I mean, being 16 or 18, regardless of it being a ghost, if you were to wake up at night and somebody, even if it was a human, you know, in your house at that time that's not supposed to be there, you've already got that sort of horror factor there, right?
Yeah, exactly. It would be terrifying at any age. But I think Ian's probably got a really interesting point there, which is the being open to a situation. If you're watching television, or by putting the television on, you're effectively diverting your attention to something that you're not seeing on screen. So potentially your periphery has been obscured, so you're not picking up on anything else. You wouldn't see something else because your attention has been focused on. But while you're in a vulnerable position, you're potentially open to communication, to feeling something, seeing something, because you're just your senses are more spread and wide open, your peripheries out there. Atish, do you have any Eastern metaphors with your yoga practices when it comes to perception of things beyond the normal, so the supernatural?
I would put a more technical view on it. So let's consider, considering all the researches of East, West, ancient, modern, considering this whole existence into as a constitution of certain dimensions. So let's put it, we call it a three-dimensional or five-dimensional. What does that mean is that there are certain fundamental forces which are enabling life, which are enabling movement. In this environment or in this arrangement, now we are existing. Everything is existing, which can be seen, which can be touched, which can be talked about, whether it is matter or it is energy. So now in this beautiful play of different nuclear forces, gravity, and electromagnetic forces, which are doing all these jobs beyond our comprehension, there is one object that can be a dynamic object based on its form and its state in space and time. We call it a tree, we call it a plant, we call it leaf, or we call it trunk. There is an object and there is an observer. So the way I look at it, actually I'm referencing a few of these principles from the yogic texts and kind of experiences people had. So there is an object and there is an observer. Considering either ghost as an object and you or I as an observer. Now it's interesting that what is an object and what is an observer? What we call as an observer is a landscape of experiencing things. For example, you have been experiencing your life in terms of relations, in terms of emotions, in terms of test. What about if I ask you a question, have you any idea about the big rocks floating around in the universe billion light years away? Can you comprehend anything about it by sitting here without referring to any of the sci-fi movies you have seen? Can you?
No.
No. Why? Because you do not have that information, access to that information. So your mind cannot play around it. Your mind cannot create any kind of fabrication or design based on that information.
So what you're saying is that these guys are seeing figures because that's their mind's way of trying to, trying to understand what they're actually seeing, which might be something completely different. Is that?
I mean, we all must agree that no matter what culture we have been growing into in our childhood, the ghost stories have been always popular, from our friends, from the television, from the programs, from the surroundings, relatives. Somehow we get this information pumped in our brain, in our experiential dimension, where we process it, whether you're in a state of childhood or youth. You are doing the same job. You're processing it. You're trying to understanding it. But the point is, when you're a child or when you're more young, your intuitive discriminating ability is not that much evolved, where you're questioning the dimensions and the cause and effect. While you are in childhood or in your teenage or the lower side of your life where you are growing, you are more driven by excitement. You are more driven by colorfulness, shining, new experience. You look at an environment and you feel very good. But the more you get into intuitive discriminating ability in your life, you look at things from more comprehensive and holistic perspective rather than looking at one narrow set. So my point here is that ghost, what is it as an object? What force sustains it? What caused it? What it is effect of?
Yeah, I can kind of understand where that point is coming from, because when you're a kid, you lie in bed, you hear noises, and it might be a rattling of the pipes or something like that. And when you're a kid, you go, oh, zombie, ghost, oh, I'm under attack. When you're an adult, you might think, ah, robber, I'm under attack. But, your perception of what that sound is changes as you grow older, because you become maybe more skeptical of ghosts or paranormal.
Also less impressionable.
Yeah.
As a child, they see a ghost movie, they assume it's all real, regardless of what it is. I mean, you see a zombie movie as an adult, you go, all right, that's a zombie movie. As a kid, you see a zombie movie, you go, oh, God, zombies are going to eat me.
Very true. That means here, who is changing? The observer is changing and its state is changing. When we were a kid or when we were a teenager or youth or we are going further,
our state is changing and our perception is changing. Object has been same, whatever you label it, but the way we are looking at it, it is changing.
So I want to throw this out to everyone. Do you guys believe in Ouija boards and actually speaking to spirits?
Yes, I do. I think Ouija boards are a form of tech which is pretty clumsy. I think if we all had the courage to suddenly go to some abandoned hospital and sit there in the middle of the night and do it, we will probably make contact with something. It wouldn't be very glamorous. It would be probably like, yep, here's something trying to communicate with us. I would expect we would have some contact and it would not be a very pleasant experience.
I don't know. I don't know if I truly believe it, but it's not something I'd be willing to risk just in case.
See, I'm definitely not sure I want to go to a haunted mansion and just to find out just in case. But you have to do it sometimes because I'm definitely influenced by TV when it comes to this. I used to watch a show called Ghost Hunters, and the places that they went to and the experiences that they supposedly had, they were kind of scary, but it wasn't the in-your-face experiences that you guys have had. There was more the chills in the air or, you know, the door slightly moves, like a paranormal activity style experience. So it when you guys were experiencing your episodes, did you have the chills? Did you have, you know, was there any other physical manifestations of
it? I think I had the cold chills, but that's also, I mean, that's a symptom of fear as well, right? So yeah, I think it's hard to say because, yeah, when you're in that situation and you're not expecting it to happen, because ghost hunters, they're going there expecting it to happen, right? So they're prepared for it. Whereas if you're having that experience and you weren't prepared for it, it's possible you'll have the cold chills, you have all these different effects, but I don't think you take as much notice of it. It's more just fear, I guess, takes over.
I agree. I think you're too busy focusing on what's happening in front of you to be thinking, oh, is that my temperature dropping, or is it you're looking at whatever is bothering you in front of you? I don't remember temperature changes. I just remember just fear and curiosity because I'm looking at something, it's not making any sense enough. And then there'd be a few times where I would call out. So if some experience, I would call out from my parents, or questioning, am I actually just, are my parents in disguise? Are they there? Like, you know, so I would call out and it you'd get this blank staring face back at you.
So what you say, guys, there are lots of guys who they explain, like, when when I saw the ghost, then I just like, I scared and I was lost my control. And so what do you say about that kind of story? So is it true?
I give you an experiment to you guys on that. Mm-hmm. The experiment is, it has come from my own experience. So what I did, I spent a day at the place where people were burned after death in India. So we people take the body there. They call it, in Hindi, they call it Shamshan. And so they take it there, they burn the body, they take the ashes, and they go away. So
it's a crematorium. Normally,
correct. So while sitting there, before reaching there, I had this stories that ghosts live there because the people are dead and they are taken there. So I went there with 5-10 people. I sat there for some time and we talked. It was all normal. And then the next step, which I took in this experiment, that I said these people to go, and then I sat alone in evening. As the night started to take place, the same place where I was sitting and the experience of lightfulness which I had with people started turning into the state of questioning and being cautious about the things happening around, the sound coming, or any, you know, any kind of sound which is about movement of an object or any kind of sound. That became, my attention became extra, you know, ultra strong.
So it was like making you nervous, you mean?
Exactly. And then in that moment, all the horrible stories which I saw any time in my life, somehow they got connected. And the awareness became very prominent and very intense on those experiences and started relating with that. I'm referring to this experiment to tell you that it is more of a self-help. The mind is helping us in certain situations to create relevant experience around that situation, which is not existential.
From my experience, the closest to that I've had to this, and I will fully admit I haven't had a real paranormal experience at all, but what I have had is I went to Auschwitz a couple of years ago, you know, the scene of a terrible, terrible act of atrocity. And whether it was spirits or whether they were lingering or just the whole place as an entity being its own kind of spirit, there was an oppressiveness there, and you actually felt, I guess, crowded in by maybe it was emotion potentially, but then I could also imagine that it could be just this congregation of elemental energy left over from spirits that couldn't pass on because of the horrible experiences that they had. And maybe because I went there as an adult, I didn't have the same radar that you have as a child, but for sure there was something there, and I don't want to attribute it just to myself. I think it was also an external force.
So let me add something on top of that. Now, the same experience reoccurred. You are into the same situation, okay? You went into that city, and now I placed one escape room, virtual escape room box on your head, and you do not know which way you're walking. Now, this three-dimensional virtual reality, which was created around your head, you are seeing the world in that glass. And I make you walk in these areas, and you will do the whole round, even the double than you did in the last time. You will, and I'll take you back to the city, and I'll remove this box, and I'll ask you, how was it? And you'll say, this virtual reality was awesome. All the time, I was very excited and adventured.
I really like that today's episode has Atisha's the skeptic.
Yeah, I know. It's great. Brilliant.
It's great to have a different sort of side of it here.
I can see where you're coming from, but then, we'd have to actually do that experiment to know for sure, because
I'm very happy to conduct it and enable it happening.
All right, we're all flying to Auschwitz. All right.
Okay. I'm not sure I would do it there just because of the, I guess, the respect factor. Do something as trivial as walk around with a headset on in a place that probably should command more respect, but maybe in a haunted house situation, maybe it might be appropriate to do that, see what happens. But then surely it can't all just be manifestations of mind, because you do have those stories, right, where people go to haunted houses. You know, there's those famous ones where if you can stay at this haunted house for one night, you win $1 million, and for some reason people, you know, don't manage to stay in. I mean, I would do a lot of things for $1 million, and if I was in a place which didn't really have any haunted, wasn't haunted at all, shouldn't everyone be winning, you know?
Let me put something here. So the way human evolution works, when you are a child, or when you are in the state of not very much, you know, provided a lot of intuitive discriminating ability on the things based on logic, facts, and rationalism, you accept things the way they are presented. You relate it, or the mind relate with the situation in form of experience. But the moment you grow and you start developing your rational abilities, where you question things, try to understand nut and bolts of the things, you do not take the things in the similar way the way it was presented to you 10 years back. So here, whatever is somebody is experiencing based on the environment, whatever you call it, it is actually the state of self, which is one person will be more frightened, the other person will be all right. If the environment is capable of doing it, why it is not putting the same impression on the all stakeholders or the participants in the situation?
That's just potentially because some people are more in tune with the spirit world than others. You know, like some people being more skilled at basketball than others. You know.
So then again, it is kind of indicating that it is a manifestation from inside out, not outside in. That
means, isn't it both?
Well, it is both, but inside out is more strong because the external entity is not able to make that impression stronger.
Sorry, can I throw it back for a second? I was going to say, is it possible it's actually related to, I guess, the type of energy that the person's sort of expressing? What I would say, if you're releasing more negative energy, it's more likely to result in experience. The reason I say this, I mean, you consider all haunted houses. People are more likely to see something in a home that they know is haunted or they're told is haunted. If you sent people to a house that didn't look haunted, but it was just an average house, if you send, let's say, two people there and just tell them, you know, stay there the night, I don't think they would have the same experience as two people that you sent there that you said, all right, this is a haunted house, see if you can last the night.
One point that I wanted to raise on this is that it always seems to be negative energy, and I don't know why. why wouldn't you go to the happy haunted house and then see Casper the Friendly Ghost? Like, why? I don't know why it's like that. Maybe it is linked to the fact that spirits that are still in this world are troubled and they haven't passed on, and the only energy that they do react to potentially could be negative energy.
If you look at mythological approaches to the supernatural, and there are additional entities that help them move along. So you've got your Grim Reaper, you've got your psychopomps, your Hermes, your Hecate, or these, and there's probably Eastern gods and goddesses that help ferry the dead across. So that's connected to this whole story. You have these spirits, these people who have either suffered a violent death or have not been given their final rites, and they're left stranded. And then you've got these additional entities which help them. It's connected to the negative side, because these spirits most of the time seem to be in strife themselves. So there's no happy haunted place, because if you're happy and you're a spirit, you've moved on. So you've gone to a better place.
I think it's also just the way that it's perceived from a child. Like, I mean, you consider all movies. If you heard there was a movie about a ghost, what would be the first thing you would think of? You would think of a horror movie, right? You wouldn't think of Casper the Friendly Ghost or something.
Ghostbusters.
Okay. But even then, there's a lot of like evil ghosts, right? I think from when we're young, we're brought up with the perception of ghosts being from a negative place. The question is it because we're brought up that way that we experience it that way, or are we brought up that way because of, you know, people have only experienced that under negative energy, so it's sort of just manifested that way?
Well, I think it is cultural. So I think this is a good, that's a good segue for our article, which is from Frank T. McAndrew. You know, the gods you worship, you know, influence the gods you see. So it's got to be cultural, because in the West, we are force-fed the Ghostbusters and the ghost hunters and all these negativity things. And it's framed in a certain way where ghosts are evil, ghosts are fictional, ghosts are just some make-believe thing that kids make up, and we either ignore it or we just have to run away terrified. That is a very much a Western view of these things. Atish, what are your thoughts on how Brad and I are perceiving and describing the supernatural?
Well, I mean, I find you guys very much optimistic on ghosts, which somehow may not be existential. It may be just a manifestation of the head, what Brad is referring as the brought up methods, which inculcates certain way of thinking. It is not necessary. In East or West, in any society, you can find people who have seen best of the horrible movies. At the same time, they are perfectly calm in any conditions. Haven't you experienced? You would have experienced for sure. People who are, they have seen best of the horrible movies, but they have no problem in conducting their life in the horrible situations, like haunted houses or anywhere. And there are people who have seen some of the movies, but they are so much afraid. For example, I have a friend. When he enters into the water, it feels like that the water is burning him. And the other friends, they are very much fine entering into water. It is somehow correlated when I look at it, because I see it as inherent component in human consciousness, which have this ability to react to certain situations and create relevant or relative emotions and experience. However, on the period of time, there are other components which are subject of being furnished or polished or exercised in human consciousness, which makes this person think beyond or experience beyond and not being affected by these horrible stories. See, very simple example you all took about haunted house. It's like you're in a virtual reality. So you're sitting here in the room. It is a virtual reality, actually, because this whole five-dimensional existence is a subconscious experience to you and conscious experience to you. You are in this belief that you are here sitting in this room. In the same way, haunted room is another virtual reality. And your mind reacts based on these real virtual realities. They seem to you it is real, but they are actually a virtual reality.
No, actually, I think that you might be able to help us out with this one. I wonder if is there less prevalence of ghost stories in Indian culture? And I wonder if that, if there is less ghost stories, is that because of the fact that there's a strong belief in reincarnation, and so therefore there's no need for ghosts because you've actually back as a cockroach if you're a bad person, or a human as if you're a good person. Is it a big ghost culture back in India or not?
All right. Okay. So if we just follow on with Atisha's line of thought, which is basically, it's about perception and the consciousness view of the world around us. What's interesting is that everyone's consciousness, everyone's worldview is tinted and tainted by the culture that they live in. With my Greek background, we've got ghost stories and we've got, you name it, everything from nymphs and goblin-y type things and vrikolaki, which are like vampires. We've got werewolves and everything, you name it. All these creatures and monsters, and they're a part of the folklore. You wouldn't necessarily be walking down the street and say, oh, there's a werewolf. It's not a day-to-day thing that you would casually run into, but they're a part of the culture. So then they would definitely give me a frame of reference if I experience something that reminds me of this. But yes, ultimately it still is my perception of someone else's reality and how they've expressed it, my interpretation that's going to make it either feel like it actually did occur, or whether it's actually a fabrication and it doesn't occur. But then you run the risk of, are we just a brain in a vat, and this is all some massive matrix-like simulation, and then nothing technically is real. So we turn off our brain and everyone ceases to exist. Everyone's just a figment of each other's consciousness. So that you run the risk of having no forces, no external agency to anything other than what you perceive. And so therefore, if you don't perceive it, it ceases to exist.
So my question to that is, if it's our own unique experiences and perception, how is it you can have two people that see the same thing without actually mentioning it beforehand? So using an example of, someone goes to a haunted house, they see, a man that has a certain sort of characteristics, and it correlates back to, some man that used to live there. You have the next person that comes in who has no idea about the history, and they see that exact same man. They're able to describe the exact same person.
Can't all be coincidence.
Exactly.
It's too common for that to happen, for it to be completely manifestations of people's minds through things that they've heard about. Again, without having had such deep experiences, it's hard for me to fully get my head around it.
I mean, to be clear with that though, if you have the experience, it doesn't mean you suddenly know how it all works, right? I mean, Spiro and I have both had experiences, and we're questioning it just as much as you are. It's very hard to determine.
Based on what Spiro was saying, if a ghost doesn't know they're a ghost, it's because they've died in a way that, I guess, is calm, and that's the way I view it. But if you're violently being stabbed, you're pretty sure you know that you've been violently stabbed, and that you're probably dead. So maybe it's the fact that they know that they're dead that is why they can't pass over, whereas someone's like, oh, hey, I'm just in a new place now. Well, it's all good.
But then the big question is, consciousness must then continue after the body's gone. So consciousness is something greater than the physical. So that means consciousness, the observer, the entity observing the observer, is eternal.
I have no idea if that is eternal, or it is just a bubble of the bubble for a second, or if the time itself, which is measuring it, is a bigger illusion. But adding one more thing here, when you visit a haunted house, you find most of the time pictures there of the people who have been living therein. Or you have been told many times that, oh, this house is that. And then you enter with this prejudices already built, and then you get certain pictures hanging in the wall. And then it is already night. Most of the horrific experiences are experienced in the night, as we have seen in most of the movies also. So again, abstraction is a beauty of existential force, which makes you see things differently. If you're looking at a rope arranged in the form of a snake in the day, you would say, oh, it's a rope. But the same rope you will see in the night, it will give you impression of a snake, and you will get goosebumps. So night is a kind of an abstraction. On what? On reality. In the same way, there can be multiple objects in surrounding naming it as a virtual reality. In this virtual reality, you can have multiple components. They can enrich the power of abstraction, and your mind will just become a play of their hands, if you understand what I mean.
I understand. I don't completely agree, but I do understand what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it. If you're looking at the water, color of the water, what do you think? What is the color of the water? Morning, you see it is something else. 2 hours later, its color is different. In the whole day, it is changing 15 colors. And you are thinking that you know about water. You know nothing about water. You are in a hurry to conclude it as a ghost. Again, in what context it exists for your mind?
The outside world beyond our minds and our bodies is somewhat separate to us. So we can only observe something at a time in space, at that angle, from that direction, and we get whatever information we can glean from it, and that's what we interpret. That's the data that we work with. We could totally miss the point because, yes, it could be just a rope on the side of the road, but we had a quick glance, it was a snake to us. So we can easily be fooled by what we see. We can easily be distracted and made to believe that with something else. A mentalist will do that with tricks, and you can be hypnotized. So many things that could be done to the human mind to make us believe something that isn't there. I think everyone agrees on that, that you can trick a person quite easily. But then we're talking about common experiences which, when lined up next to each other, seem to be consistent. For example, we can say most people have experienced joy, most people have experienced fear, most people have experienced anger. So those emotions, generally, even though we all perceive them slightly differently, we all have different physiological reactions to fear or to happiness. We can all roughly say there is an emotion called happy. When we experience something paranormal, supernatural, and you relate to someone else's experience and there are commonalities, it would suggest that there is something there which we don't really understand, but there is it's an external factor that is actually being picked up by our faculties, and we actually perceive it in some way or form. We may be totally perceiving it incorrectly, but we are perceiving something. And that would be, in my view, framed within the culture that we've grown up in, and by the gods we're told to worship or not to worship. Someone's religion is someone else's blasphemy. So that would definitely change everything, the way we interpret all the data coming through our eyeballs into our heads.
I would say that I can claim nothing except then saying that it is a situation of being lost. That all the banks, all the foundations which you will bank upon to conclude something, it is relative. And that is why saying it that something exists or something exists, everything exists in experience. If it is not existential for your experience, it doesn't exist in reality.
That's actually a very dangerous bit of thinking there. So, because basically you're saying if we can't see it, smell it, hear it, it doesn't exist. So only empirical evidence will mean it's real. That also ties in though with ignorance though. If I didn't know anyone in this room existed until I actually joined this company. So I believe you're all real. I can see you all and I hope you're all real. I wasn't talking to a blank wall. So there's you run the risk of being ultra materialist and only drawing the line that, well, if it can only be measured and perceived, then that's the only reality. Anything beyond that is relative and could be up to interpretation. That's a very limiting view though.
Well, look at a situation, a person is depressed in a continuous prolonged period, but at the same time, he's eating his food every day. He's breathing the air. He's seeing the environment. He's experiencing the weather and climate, but he's also experiencing his deeper state of being depressed or stressed, which is actually more underneath layer to what food eating experience he's having every day. So what I'm saying is that experiences, they have many layers for a human consciousness. Some certain experiences, you experience them, they make their impression and they fade over time. Certain experiences, they make very prolonged, deep footprints. For example, somebody got a drowning experience, and then in the whole life, whenever he went to the water, he got this fear with him because it was very deeply rooted footprint. So what I'm trying to say that is that whatever we look at, there are many layers of looking at things and seeing at things. So for example, looking at the color of the water of the sea is a surface layer seeing, okay, oh, it's very bright, it's very this and that. But when we look at its behavior from morning to evening, we see it is changing. So there is no color which we can say, oh, it is the actual color of the water. It is all the reflection of the sun and the other environmental forces. So our consciousness is certain experiences which we receive. They come, they go. Certain experiences, they exist, they make footprint and remain longer. In this light, if you look at the experience of having ghost or any other entity for that matter, when you look at your theological cultivation of your life by your culture and family and the emotional inculcation into you, then you find it that more of it in your life, what you're reflecting is fed to you by certain means. You're just taking that data from your fed information and processing it and drawing out various results.
Well, this is a conversation that definitely has no end and will be spoken about to the day that time ends. So
I think that like a ghost, whenever you bring it up, you're always going to have the people who believe it, people who don't believe it. You're always going to go around in that loop, right? It's never ending. How do you truly prove it?
Maybe one day we will. Definitely are people out there trying to prove it. People use things like a ghost box and actually try and see if they can hear it. The interesting thing would be if it does get proven one day in a scientific, repeatable fashion and how that would change the world. Yeah, so this is something that's fascinating to me and I think will probably come up in our conversations again. Well, on that note, we'll leave it there, fellow lunchers. You can continue this discussion with us on social media via Instagram at the Lunchtime Special Podcast, or on Facebook, again, at the Lunchtime Special Podcast. You can also follow us on CastBox, SoundCloud, iTunes, give us a good rating there, as well as other popular podcatchers. And you can visit our website at thelunchtimespecialpodcast.com. Until next time.